The following contains strong language, violence, and nudity. It is intended only for mature audiences. Discretion advised.
You enter. Abandon all hope.
It's time for the Spawnometer. Story of the general from Hell's Army, Satan.
Could it be Satan?
Well, you really ran with that one, boy. I just tossed that one up in the air.
In this corner, we have
Diablo Frank.
And I am your oral speaker, Senor Fixit.
And today we're going to talk about Spawn number 11, released on June 22nd, 1993. Same month as Image Plus number 1, The Max One Half, Savage Dragon number 1, Deathmate Prologue, and the first trades of Savage Dragon and Wildcats. Story is called Home, and it is dedicated to Gil Kane. Gil Kane was not yet dead then. Might have killed him. He may have sped along the process, unfortunately,
it's Frank,
having
right?
this issue dedicated to him.
This is Frank Miller's, right?
This is Frank Miller. Oh. Please tell us about Frank Miller's issue, completing the writer series of Spawn.
Oh, okay, so this was definitely for the check. Abso-fucking-lutely for the check.
I think that Frank Miller already invented trolling with this issue.
Yes, I concur. Apparently you have two gangs.
The nerds and the creeps.
And the creeps. And please right there play a small snippet of...
I thought I would do color.
Oh yeah. Well, it's true. They do. They try to play up the Crips and the Bloods.
The creeps. Yeah.
And the Bloods. Fuck, dude. This was garbage to like the next. Like you expect.
Well, you see, this is the thing, though. Please don't critique the story that we haven't talked yet. Tell the
this
people
story
what the story was.
Because it's garbage.
It
you
is garbage.
Literally have two
so
gangs.
Take 2 minutes and tell the story.
Two gangs fighting. One the nerds, one the creeps. Creep kill nerds. Nerds die. And then you have
they both have cyborgs that work.
Yeah, they have like the big tough guys. The techs are the nerds, and they have a guy that speaks like that. Nerd crush. Creep by die. Like really.
I believe that's Byron, who has a trademark next to the name Byron. And I think it's spelled with like letters flipped or something.
Yeah. Well, no, every other, the S's and the P's, I think, are flipped when he's conversing.
Yeah. Well, like, is he supposed to be like Russian or some shit, or is he just, oh, no, he's not, he's simple.
Oh,
he's
Simple Jack.
I got a good brain.
Yeah, yeah.
We went there.
Never go full Byron.
Oh, dude, you went there, you bastard. And then on the opposite side, you have the creeps who have...
James, trademark.
Okay, I thought it was Glenn for some reason. And he's very emotional.
That's how you know that it's doing it on purpose when he trademarks the name James.
James. And he's emotional, apparently, because he's crying because they killed a creep,
a female character. The story starts with Spawn in his alley, waking up from the dreams he's been having
about Angela and aardvarks
and everything. You're reintroduced to Bobby, the main homeless dude that he hangs out with.
And Boots.
And he's called Boots because...
He really loves his boots.
That's all he's got in this world, so he takes really good care of his boots. I thought that Boots looked a little like Frank. Am I wrong?
I can see that.
So, and literally at one point... Oh, yeah, they hear gunshots, which is when one of the gangs is killing the chick from the other gang. And they literally tug on Spawn's cape, which... would make sense. It's a very long cape. There's a lot of opportunity to grab at it. But I think almost maybe they're mocking Spawn as no Superman because you could tug on Spawn's cape.
Yeah.
You know, thought that might be a little jab.
I didn't see read into that one.
Oh, and there was also a moment where Spawn is going after the gangs and he does the leap against the lightning or the moonlight. And I think that it was intentionally Todd McFarlane doing a riff on the cover of Dark Knight Returns #1.
Yeah, I kind of got that.
But yeah, so they kill a chick from one of the gangs.
The creeps.
And they also shoot
Spawn. The nerds
Spawn.
Kill a creep.
James from the game is all like, oh, I'm so broken up about it. But then that doesn't stop him wanting to kill a bunch of people. And it's like, why are you stopping me from killing people? You're not letting me explore my emotionality or something like that. fucking awful.
Dude, I'm telling you, dude, he literally said, how much? You need a story by where? He wrote this in like 15 minutes, dude. He put no fucking thought into it. There's no thought into it.
He was doing an Image comic, and he did it, I think, as a parody.
You think he was trolling them?
He's totally fucking trolling them. Trademark the name James. Yes, he was totally trolling them. Pinups, ultraviolence, stupid rationales, geeks versus creeps. Yeah, totally.
Okay. Well, then maybe I got to give some...
He thought he was making a funny...
Yeah,
it wasn't funny.
I thought he was just like, I got you a script in 10 minutes. Like, I wrote this on the way up through the elevator type thing.
I'm sure he said, I'm going to hack something out, give me my money. So what happens at the end of the story? Or what happens over the course? We already covered the entire plot,
so they
right?
punch a hole, pretty much. That was the plot. I mean, there's a shot. The nerd shoots Spawn. So Spawn decides he's going to take care of both of them. The nerds really want this alleyway because it leads straight into the heart of the creep territory. The creeps want to defend it because they see it as a weakness to them. Spawn is... That's his alleyway. He's not going to let either side have it. So apparently the nerds are really into tech. And I believe Spawn creates like a hologram of himself or something before them.
He does demonstrate teleportation in the story.
No, that's at the end. No, there's a part.
But they make a point because one thing...
Because he appears before the nerds and the nerds are like, oh my God, look at that tech. It's a hologram. Like they're,
yeah, they, I think they think he's a hologram because he's teleporting or something.
Because he's talking about how he's going to hunt them all down. And yeah. so this gets both gangs into the hallway.
War between the two groups
in the alleyway. Yeah. And they begin
and he's
to
also
just,
made a point of securing a bunch of military grade weapons for himself.
Yeah. And they battle a lot and basically kill each other off until the very end when I believe only Byron was left.
I think Byron is the one who's left and he thinks he's going to be the king
of the alleyway of a stinky alleyway, as he puts it.
Right. And Spawn decides, let's play Alien. I think he literally says
that. Yeah, that was
so what happens?
He teleports inside of him. He describes how when he's teleporting, he's like, wow, this was a little more difficult than I thought because he had five layers of Teflon and one layer of nuke, some kind of armored nuke thing. And so he teleports inside of Byron and begins to punch his way out.
What he notes is the quote of Houdini's, safes and vaults are designed to keep people out, not to keep people in.
Yeah.
So he's teleported inside the cyborg with the heavy armor on the outside. He's going to come from the inside out and rip his way through cyborg dude.
I wonder at any time. And McFarlane like, you motherfucker. I'm giving you $100K for this shit.
That's just it, though.
It had to be all named, dude.
It was all about Frank Miller writes Spawn. And it didn't matter what Frank Miller wrote, he wrote Spawn. And they sold probably close to a million copies of that or somewhere in that neighborhood. So the gimmick worked. Even though it was a fucking terrible story.
By far the worst of all of them.
It's not the worst Spawn comic I've ever read because Todd McFarlane's run with Simone Kazinski.
No. We're talking about the writer's block.
Yeah, the writer. Oh, easily. I was asking you to rate. I don't think you ever gave me a number value on Spawn number 10 on a scale from 1 to 10. Did you ever give me a number on that?
I don't think I gave you a number. 7, 6, somewhere around there. I mean, it wasn't
great.
That's
actually decent based on the way you're describing it. I fucking love that issue.
Like I told you earlier when we were off mic, I told you I didn't have a problem with it if you took it out of canon, but it's part of canon and I had a problem with that.
But it's not really because it's taking place
in the
alternate
dimension.
Yes,
it is. It's part of canon. If it was a side story, a one shot off to the side, then I would be like, okay, that's kind of a cool, that's their way of kind of thumbing the industry. Gotcha. But if you're making it part of canon, I have to include that book. We're running full speed and someone just slammed the brakes. Now, I get it. You get off on that one. I just was like, I don't need the inside baseball comic book.
I
want
to say, to me, Spawn number 10 is like the Bible of Image Comics. I love that story because it inspires
me. We did a whole fucking 30 minutes.
I love that story so much and it's so important. I think every comic creator should read that story and take it to heart. I think it does exactly what it's designed to do. It's supposed to fire you up to believe in yourself, to believe in your creations. It's the Image story. It's the Image ideal.
All right. So we already did a whole hour of this shit. So this one, I give it a fucking -1, -2, dude. Like, I can't believe Frank Miller wrote this. I do believe he wrote it.
I think this was the first indication that Frank was broken and would continue
to
break down.
He was out of gas.
Well, no, because he was still doing Sin City, and Sin City was still good at the point where he did this. Sin City was fucking spectacular. The Long Goodbye is outstanding. It's one of the great comic works, I feel. More for the art than the story, but still a great comic work, and I think that several of the succeeding Sin City miniseries are also excellent works, but this was an indication that was the end of Frank Miller being a genius and the beginning of Frank Miller being a shithead troll. Although, in his defense, he has in recent months or years come out and said that he was wrong to attack Occupy Wall Street the way that he has. had. He felt like he was misguided in that time period, and he's expressed regrets for his hard right stances in that time period. So maybe he's coming out of the darkness. I love those Spawn stories in the writer series so much that I actually had second thoughts about discontinuing Spawn. And then when I read Spawn 11, I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm out. I'm done. I don't want this shit. I don't like this shit.
Honestly, I think...
And I didn't come back for years. I was years later
than I think that's the only second time I've ever read it. I think the first time I read it, I was like, God, this is so fucking bad. And I think like I literally finished reading it, and then I didn't read another Spawn comic for maybe a year. I collected them, but I didn't read them. It took quite a bit to get me back into it.
The reason why I read Spawn comics again after that is because I started working at a comic shop. At both of the comic shops that I ran in the 90s, that was far away the best-selling book we had.
Spawn,
yeah. I was working at a smaller shop, and so we were ordering about 50 copies of Spawn at that smaller shop. And then when I went to the bigger shop down the road, we were ordering in excess of 100 to 150 copies per month of Spawn. Now, the fact is, around the time I came in was when the industry had already started to cave, but also the Spawn market started to crave, and we started having just stacks of unsold copies. Spawn 100 was a major turning point in terms of the readership and the orders for Spawn. But Spawn was doing big numbers, and because we had so many copies lying around, at the first shop, I was already realizing that the worm had turned on Spawn and started trying to liquidate all that excess stock. And so since we had so many copies lying around, plus I took advantage of strip covers. The book was so late, the Diamond would take returns on the book. So I would strip the covers and then keep the coverless copies and read them while I was in the tub and shit, because I knew that they had no value to them. And so that's the reason why I started reading Spawn again. But in that time period, I didn't read any Spawn because I was so turned off by Spawn 11. It just killed my interest in that book for the longest time. I thought it was just the worst. And I was so pissed off at that story. And pissed off at Frank Miller. I started looking at him more critically from that point onward.
Ditto.
November 1992 was the second month since Image Comics' inception to not publish a single issue. December tried to make up for it with the company's second most productive month to date, six whole comics. Savage Dragon number 3 came out exactly 2 months after the second. Spawn number 6 was approximately a six-week issue. Youngblood number 0 was a stopgap, arriving 2 months after Youngblood number 3 by guest artists. Jim Valentino's Shadowhawk number 3 maintained a perfect bi-monthly schedule, and Jim Lee's Wildcats managed the same schedule between issues 2 and 3 at least. Meanwhile, Supreme number 1 was the third title by Rob Liefeld Studio, only the second official ongoing series in Image Comics, right after Spawn, and even remotely resembled a regular shipping schedule eventually. Launching on December 4th, 1992, 8 whole issues were out just over a year later. Too bad about the 3-month gap between issues 1 and 2, and the 3.5 months between issues 2 and 3. It was sort of kind of monthly from there, given a week or two for tardiness. So Supreme actually debuted in Youngblood number 3, in a story by Rob Liefeld and Brian Murray that introduced us to the team Heavy Metal, consisting of Decibel, Riot, Menagerie, and Skyraker. Do you want to tell us a story?
Oh, we're talking about Supreme already? Oh, shit, dude. You just kind of rolled right into that one. Wait, are we talking about the little mini one?
Yeah, little 5-page backstory.
Oh, that was
story.
Fucking garbage. So how does Heavy Metal spell?
M-E-T-T-L-E.
Fuck, you knew we were fucked right there, man. You knew we were fucked.
I'll tell you this. I'm pretty sure I had dropped Youngblood with issue number 2, so I never read Youngblood number 3. And part of the deciding factor for not ever picking up Youngblood number 3 was the introduction of a team called Heavy Metal. Right, off the bat, I was like, oh, fuck you, I'm out.
Yeah, dude, the minute I saw their name, I love their alien Batman, because it's an alien Batman.
Yeah, well, it's funny because the cover has Supreme on it. Youngblood number 3, this is the flip cover, because they had two covers. You look at this cover of Supreme, and you just know that on that back right leg, he just totally gave up. Fuck it, I'm Rob Liefeld, I'm just going to do some congenital deformity squiggle thing, and then crosshatch the fuck out of it, and nobody's going to say two shits to me. And that was about right. So the cover says Enter Supreme, but then you open the cover, and you see it's Extra Image presents Supreme. Supreme number 2, following up on Infinity, which we covered in the last episode, even though I think this shipped before Infinity. But anyway, in fact, it did. Yeah, we just, because of the needs of our show, we went ahead and pulled Infinity up the front. So the second Extreme Image was the first to come out.
So, okay, we have Alien Batman.
And it's, okay, the cover says Enter Supreme, and then the inside cover with the faux cover for Extreme Image says Enter Heavy Metal. That's a little entering going on here, you know, especially for an image where the story's all guys. It's all dudes. They could all be bears for all we know.
Well, you got what? Morph?
Okay, you got Morph from the X-Men cartoon.
Who morphs into human
Or Beast Boy from Teen Titans.
True.
What does he do? He turns into animals.
But human-formed animals.
Yes.
Humanoid animals.
Well, I mean, they're not all full human, but
Dude, it's a whale with arms. It's a centaur.
They're sort of like mythological creatures for the most part. But
I don't know any mythos that has a fucking whale with arms, dude.
In his normal form, he's like just a white dude with no features, so he's basically Morph.
Yeah, he's Morph. And then you got, what's his name? Runaway or?
Riot.
Riot.
I love that the black dude is named Riot. And they make a point of his real interest is in the hood. He really wants to work on the neighborhood. He's just doing the heavy metal superhero stuff on his spare time
to make extra money. Yeah.
And his name's Riot. And it's 1992.
Yeah.
And it's produced in the California area, Southern California. I wonder what they were alluding to. He's got that fucking little hammer he runs around with. What the fuck was that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He
doesn't do anything with hammers.
He's a super speedster, but he's running around with a little hammer. He's like, MC Hammer? What the fuck is that about? You got Decibel, who is just
a sound dude.
Immediate Mort. I mean, he's got like the little sound wave things on his chest.
He's the poor man's Iron Man.
But the whole team looks like they're from a Champions RPG campaign. None of these guys look like they've got any real promise.
Wasn't there one more?
Yeah, and then there's Skyraker. Like you said, the funny thing is, he comes off like Alien Batman, but he's got all these fins.
Like Wolverine.
No, he's not like Wolverine.
Actually, you know
he looks like a Stingray, or he looks like the Stingray character from the Marvel comics. He's got the scalp cape, but he's got the fin on his nose.
I thought he looked like from Jeepers Creepers, the Creeper, where he has like those fins. Have you ever seen the movie where
you kind of see
where he opens up? He kind of has that
because he does fly.
Yeah.
But I thought because he's got a fin across his nose, he looked like an Aquaman villain. He kind of looks like Ocean Master in the face, but he's an alien. He flies. He's got superhuman strength. And he's got this blade that can cut through anything. His actual alien race is a Covan. It's another one of Rob Liefeld's many alien races. I'm starting to see the Legion of Superheroes influence on Liefeld. I don't know if you know this. He kind of got his start on Legion of Superheroes.
I think you told me that one time. Because I think Youngblood was supposed to be a...
No, it was going to be a Teen Titans.
Oh, Teen Titans. That's right, Teen Titans.
But his first published work at a major company was doing pieces for the Who's Who in Legion of Superheroes book. And so obviously that was a big book in the mid-80s. So he was a fan, and all these alien races, especially because you can kind of see parallels between them and the DC races, with the exception of Skyraker here. But it's funny because he's such a goofy looking, aquatic looking dude, and yet he's not an aqua guy.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be like, he's kind of the badass of the group, and yet he looks like, you know, an Aquaman villain. So it's like this weird cognitive dissonance between how this guy's sold and what the visuals would make you think of this dude.
So there's only three of them plus Supreme?
There's four, because it's Riot, Menagerie, Skyraker, and Decibel.
Oh, okay. Because I'm trying to remember which one got hurt that had a daughter that was like smoking.
Well, don't fucking... We're telling the synopsis right now. Who gives a shit?
There's a horrible stories.
Okay, so what happens... All we really see in the five-page heavy metal introduction is the introduction of the team's powers and their bullshit non-dynamic, because they don't really fit that well. And the assertion that they need another leader and somebody who's going to like kind of be their front man.
Talking about how this character might leave the team because of this, and this guy might leave because of that. They all have reasons why the team won't stay together without someone to hold it together.
So they need a linchpin.
Yeah.
And then the whole time you've got these allusions to Supreme fly through space, and then there's a splash page at the very end that doubles as the cover to Supreme number one.
Yeah.
The only thing they did different was it had a foil stamped embossed Supreme logo, and they did a watercolor. It's the same exact image, recolored in watercolors, and they added Sonic Boom quasar effect to his flight. And they added some like Starscape to it as well. But it's still the same image.
Okay, so you got any Frank information on Supreme now?
Not right now. We're going to talk about the story. If you can be linear and talk about the story. I will point out, though, that reading through this issue of Youngblood, the letters page of Youngblood is Bloodlines. So when Liefeld asserts that DC was intentionally trying to rip him off and dilute his brand, it doesn't help that they had an event called Bloodlines. And also we have, the debut of Bloodstrike in a pinup in this issue, drawn by Rob Liefeld. And I noticed that the letters pages on Youngblood Supreme feature several Houstonians.
Oh, really?
It seemed to be a very popular line of books with Houstonians. What happens to Supreme number one, though?
A space organization notices a bogey coming in at full speed. It turns out to be Supreme returning back to Earth after a 50-year journey.
I don't know if you noticed, but it's actually Supreme Volume 2.
Oh, is it?
And in the letters pages, they note that there's going to be a Supreme Volume 1 eventually that's going to chronicle his adventures on Earth from when he was first on the planet.
I think they did do that later on.
No, they never did Supreme Volume 1. They did some miniseries, but they never did an actual alluded Volume to 1. Him. Yeah. He was apparently a hero, a superhero, Superman-type figure in the World War II of the Extreme Universe.
Well, yeah, they allude to that. They show him beating up like Nazis and shit. Like that, or burning them with his laser beams or some shit. So he returns back to Earth. He's confronted by Youngblood, who meet him in space.
And do you remember which members actually show up in space?
They've got Bad Rock. I know that was there. Battalion, I think, was there. That
Battalion was from Stormwatch. Sentinel.
Sentinel. Interchangeable.
don't say that the black dudes.
No, interchangeable. Dude, the other characters are, dude. They're always like one team or the other. I could never tell
who's on. Both teams had leaders that had the same basic setup. Yeah, I'll give you that.
No, but I could never keep track, dude. Fuji was one minute he's something, and like Wildstorm, and then he's Wildcat. Or
Fuji and Bad Rock have some similarities, too. Yeah.
Kruger, I think, was there.
Combat.
Was it Combat?
They're both Catellans.
Yeah.
And they remember Cat Tellans because they're like cat-like people. the main way you can tell between the two of them is that Combat dresses like Akroyer from the Micronauts. He got the same helmet.
Okay, if you're gonna frank me this later now, man.
But you know Akroyer, right?
Yeah, well.
This is the world of the Micronauts. Akroyer, the enemy, can stage make-believe battles against Akroyer. Like all Micronauts, Akroyer has interchangeable parts, so you can create your own toys. Micronauts, made of plastic and die-cast metal, each sold separately by Mego.
I know the character from
the one with the helmet and the big. Yeah, it looks like he's wearing Galactus' helmet, basically. And they're both big warrior dudes.
And then, was there a robot dude?
Firetron.
Die Hard was there. Yeah.
Okay, Die Hard was there.
Which is going to be a problem in terms of continuity later on.
No, you don't say. Not in an image book. Fuck. Probably like 10 other characters I don't remember.
I think Photon was there too. The guy who's got the energy powers. Who's in it?
Hey, be careful now. Accurate. They got multiple energy guys. Don't be getting racist on me with no energy guys. They're all different.
Well, it's interesting, too, because Combat doesn't believe that this is the Supreme who's involved in the Maxia campaign, which will be referenced throughout the first six
years. Okay, so Supreme is an alien, then.
They do not confirm or deny because that. They do not tell you
where this dude is from. Well, they allude that in the book, too. There's a little bit of a side story with Skyraker or whatever his name is. We'll just call him Alien Batman.
Skyraker. It's fine.
Alien Batman. I like Alien Batman.
Well, what's funny is I assume that the intention was for that to be a play on Moonraker, the James Bond movie. But Skyrakers are actually a form of LED light now. You could buy it on the internet. And it's also a pretty lame Skydrop attraction in the UK. It's just like one of our Skydrops, except
you know when you frank it sometimes? It just hurts. Like, it just hurts me, man. It makes me cry a little bit.
Well, you know how most Skydrops, they go up and then they drop down? This one actually spins, too.
Yeah, I know. I'm feeling that sensation right now because you're franking me.
Yeah, so, drop down and spin on you. Yeah.
So they confront him. They battle him a little bit, and he just beats that ass.
It is worth noting, though, that he does show restraint. They attack him. Specifically, was it Combat that attacks him first? Yeah, it was.
Yeah, right? Because he's like, offended. You're not Supreme.
You're not Supreme. I'm going to kick your ass now.
Yeah, and then Supreme just goes to start beating some ass. And then Battalion.
It's worth noting that these are
among... Oh, Sentinel, I'm sorry. Sentinel's like, stop. Our bad.
Yeah.
We just want to talk to you. We need to go down to Earth. And Supreme, the thing I liked about Supreme and the big selling point I remember people telling me is he's arrogant. He's like, you know, Superman is the Boy Scout. Well, Supreme is not the Boy Scout. Yeah, he's very arrogant. Pompous, yeah. He knows where he stands in the food chain.
And he calls lets you know. Supreme.
Yeah, he lets you know. And it's not Mr. Supreme because there's a point where they call him Mr. Supreme. It's not just Supreme.
Like, I am Supreme.
So there's this sense of like, yeah, the dick. They fly down to Earth. And immediately offer him a contract.
With Youngblood.
With Youngblood that has, like, perks and all this shit.
Well, not just that. Remember, he's put it before, like, an international council of people from all over the world. Like, world leaders. Like a little impromptu UN council. And I think that's supposed to be Bill Clinton talking to him. Although he's pumped up later in the series where he's much more photorealistic. Yeah. So maybe it's supposed to be Graves from Youngblood. There's so many white-haired dudes in suits that are, like, power players in these extreme comics. They all kind of run together after a while. I'm definitely a racist against white people, especially white men. Maybe it was Graves. It was either Graves or Bill Clinton. I don't know.
Okay.
But they do realize how extraordinarily powerful he is, and the first thing you want to do is hook him up with Youngblood, and he's like, nada.
Yeah. Now he is shocked that there's so many superpowered humans.
Yeah, he alludes
to it like, huh? When did y'all start powering up humans?
Well, that he doesn't like that they seem to be genetically created. Like they're actually using genetics to create these people intentionally, rather than being.
And so, I'm trying to remember how Heavy Metal comes into play.
It's in the second issue. At the end of the first issue, Supreme flies away from the Youngblood group crying. We don't know why he's crying. Just like we don't know why he's returned to Earth after all these years. And so, in the second issue, he starts complaining about how all the heroes that he knew when he was on Earth,
they're all dead,
like Sentinel, Glory, and Super Patriot. And you may remember that Die Hard is treated as a World War II hero and essentially the same suit as the android version we see today. So the question is, why doesn't Die Hard recognize Supreme and vice versa? Yeah. And in fact, they reference Glory. Glory's first appearance is in Youngblood Strike File, which is a World War II era story in which he co-stars with Die Hard, who's the star of that particular segment of the book. So it doesn't make sense that those two didn't know each other immediately.
Yeah.
Supreme decides he's going to go and kill his arch nemesis, his Lex Luthor, Zachariah Grislock.
He
confirms it's been 47 years exactly since he's been on Earth. Well, roughly since he's been on Earth, not 50. So.
And he shows how he drove over his Jimmy Olsen
while Supreme was away.
And he goes, it was so satisfying to run over him in a news truck. I'm assuming he raped and murdered Lois Lane.
Okay, so we see two images. To we it. See her bound hands with a bloody locket that says Love Supreme on it.
Yeah.
And then below that, we see what appears to be her nude breast.
Yeah, you saw that too. Well, yes. No. That was the Young Justice group.
No.
Yes.
There's three panels on the page. One of it is Jimmy Olsen getting run over by the truck.
There's
one of
her hands that are bound.
Louise bound up. And then the third one is shots of the Junior Supreme Squad with their heads mounted on walls like animal trophies.
Yeah.
Which is funny because there's a commission theme that pops up on the site Comic Art Fans. This one dude who gets human trophy heads as commissions. Like he'll have supervillains who's mounting the heads of the heroes on the wall and vice versa. So I wonder if maybe he got that from this book.
Maybe.
That'd be an interesting thing.
I can't think of any other book that's ever displayed something like that.
But they make it clear that Supreme abandoned all these people that had been his cohorts, and Grizzlock systematically murdered and tortured a lot of them.
Wait, real quick. Did Frank Miller ever use that in his comics, like in the movie where they have the women, the prostitutes' heads mounted? Or did Frank steal it from this book?
Was that in Sin City, maybe?
Yeah, Sin City. When Marv goes to kill Elijah Wood's character.
Wayne or something? Dwight. No one Dwight.
No.
I know what you're talking about, though. The really scary dude who never talks, And did he have heads mounted?
Yeah. The prostitutes.
So that's probably where they stole it from, is they stole that from, because Sin City was before Supreme.
I was wondering. Okay.
So it was probably Sin City and then Supreme and then those commissions in the early 2000s and onward. Yeah.
And that, folks, was an X-File moment. We connected. That was Red Yarn moment.
That was our yarn now.
That was a Red Yarn moment. Supreme decides he's going to murder him right there. He's just going to beat his fucking skull.
He's in prison.
And I'm assuming Supreme at one time was kind of like Superman, where he was gentle and
he hadn't killed Grizzlock 47 years earlier. So
I'm assuming he was kind of a Boy Scout. And then whatever.
Grizzlock was kind of taunting him as though he had impunity.
Oh, dude, he just murdered all his friends and family, like people he loved.
I don't think he just got told that. I'm sure he murdered them decades earlier.
Well, no, but he told him, when you left the door open. I went to town. It was so much fun, but you weren't here to stop me.
I missed you. Wasn't nearly the same without you.
So it had that Joker vibe to it, Joker to Batman. But Supreme must have seen
some
shit.
Which is another Frank Miller thing, too, by the way. That whole homoerotic relationship between Batman and the Joker, that Dark Knight Returns, dude.
Okay, I thought it was more Grant Morrison.
One of the things that they criticized Dark Knight Returns for back in the day was that they overtly intimated that there was a homosexual quality to the Joker. Previously, he was just the clown prince of crime, but it was Miller that really got started on the road to he's actually like a weird sexual attraction thing to Batman.
Oh, okay. So, did not know that.
Yeah.
But Supreme must have seen some shit out there, man. He must have seen some real shit because he came back fucked. He's about to chop his head with his hand, and I guess that's when heavy metal steps in and stops him.
He's been in the shit, the space shit.
He's got that 1,000-mile stare now. He just sees down the road.
1,000-mile heat vision.
Yeah, he's gone.
What did they call it? Like,
China don't surf no more.
They call it beta vision?
Dude, I don't know.
No, they do call it beta vision because I was like, I wonder if how the incels would feel about a dude with beta vision, because Supreme would really kind of be up their alley as like the ultimate power fantasy. So it's weird that he would have beta vision. And I don't know if that was his X-ray vision or his heat vision, but anyway,
We'll get to that scene in a moment. So heavy metal shows up and
Him from killing Grizzlock because Grizzlock is providing information to the government to help them.
Apparently, they're a lot stronger than Youngblood because they actually were able to take him down a little bit.
They definitely held him off a little bit longer.
I mean, come on. Space Batman stabbed him.
Space Batman is a bad... This is where they show how badass Skywalker is. Because I'm looking at him like, who's this loser? And his... What is it called? Kovan Blade.
Let's call it what it is. It's a it's a fucking...
it's adamantium.
Klingon. No, it's a Klingon blade, dude.
Oh, yes, that Klingon...
Yeah.
Boktar or something.
Yeah, dude, I saw that and I was like, oh, it's Klingon.
One weapon. The Sword of Kalos. Can destroy the Klingon Empire.
Okay.
Yeah, you got a point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the dude is basically like Worf. That's what's so weird.
He's fucking Worf.
But see, they already had a Worf because they had Combat, who's also Worf. So how many fucking Worfs does Rob Liefeld
Come on, dude. How original is Liefeld? Come on.
Yeah, I'm not going to dispute that.
Worf stabs him with his Klingon blade.
The Klingon Batleth.
Did he slash him across the face?
No. I guess his face. You're right. His face. And then he falls to the earth. And then, Morph...
He bleeds into his eye, so his eye starts to turn red.
Morph turns into some animal, lands on top of him, knocks him into the earth. Or is that Decimal that hits him? Like, Decimal's attacking him. Well, no. Riot attacks him and starts beating him with the little hammers.
And he said, it's like punching stone.
He's like, little hammers, little hammers. hammers, little hammers. And Decimal turns up the music. He's like, we're not gonna take it. He's like blasting them with like some really shitty 80s music. Decimal
sucks.
And so they're all hitting. And I was like, dude, you just fought Youngbloods and like beat their ass. And like, these guys are, they don't even have their own
really
book.
They really build up heavy metal.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, these dudes don't even have their own book and they're beating your ass. Like, what? So Supreme at one moment was like, okay, this shit's gonna stop now. And the fight ends. They invite him back to their lair to talk to their boss, who I'm assuming is kind of a Tao character. Well, like this.
No, you're giving him too much credit. Really? At one point, they call
him. He's a villain.
Not necessarily. Okay, see, this is what's fucked about this dude. For starters, he has an assistant named.
Jerome? I don't know.
No, okay, what's Mr. Burns' assistant's name?
Smithers?
Same thing.
What's this about a fisting?
Which is like, guys, this is a dumb joke. But yeah, he has an assistant named Smithers. Smithers calls him Mr. Gate in his early appearances. But I guess they thought that was too close.
To Bill Gates?
Too on the nose? No, because, well, maybe, I don't know. But see, he runs Gate International, the wannabe
but
Star
Gates
Labs.
But Gates sounds or something, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like genetic testing something or other. They genetically engineer superhumans. Okay. One of the main businesses. And I think they were introduced in the storyline with Prophet, because I think they were acquiring Prophet's tube. Anyway, so he apparently runs Gate. His name is Jason Temple. And again, my problem is that this dude looks and serves the same purpose as Gates from Youngblood. So it's like, these guys are like interchangeable. It just does, it bothers me.
Apparently he's going to have a talk with Supreme. They ask for 5 minutes, kind of schmoozing Supreme. Supreme tells him, you got 2 minutes. And they're like, oh, the great negotiator, what's he going to do? And they walk in and they come back and Supreme joins the team. And apparently he told him something that, and again, that's why I thought he was like Tower. He's like this mental, you know, he can manipulate you.
He's more like Max Lord. That's Max probably Lord, the difference between Graves and he's much more like Max Lord because he's a businessman and he's a schmoozer and he's a guy who can talk you into anything.
But I thought he
that's the big difference.
Well, because but he apparently told something to Supreme where Supreme was like, all right, I'll join the team. All of a sudden, there's a attack at an airport or some kind of where all the dignitaries are at.
They're at Dulles Airport. The security's maxed out because there's going to be all these like dignitaries or some stuff, shit. Yeah. Terrorists come in. But the problem is the terrorists don't look in any way different from the Secret Service guys that are watching these dudes.
Yeah, they just look like dudes in suits.
I really didn't understand what was happening there.
You got me, dude. All I know is all of a sudden Youngblood's there.
Well, not just Youngblood, but also Bloodstrike.
Yeah, Bloodstrike is there.
For the team.
Heavy Metal's there.
Yeah, Heavy Metal's there.
And they're all arguing about how they're going to get in there, who's going to do
what.
And what's
funny is they set up as though Bloodstrike is going to be fighting Supreme, but Bloodstrike just like stands around and does like crowd control and shit. They don't do shit.
Well, I thought what was really weird to me was, aren't these teams supposed to be like covert and like hush hush and quiet and.
Yeah, Bloodstrike especially, right?
Yeah, like, why are they, my understanding, Youngblood would be there showing off, hey, we're here. All those other teams would have been like bust in quietly and in the background and you would have never known they struck. And
yeah,
they're all
camera.
In front of everybody
like
nobody.
Bloodstrike, I thought, was like a covert government operation.
Like a hit
team.
Yeah, dude, I think they're a hit team, aren't they?
We gotta read Bloodstrike. It's coming up. But
So they're all discussing how they're gonna do it, and Supreme's like, fuck this, I'm in. And he goes in there.
They're afraid that they go in that they're gonna kill the
They're already killing. Yeah, they're already killing. They're like, we have to hurry up. They're killing hostages. And Supreme's like, fuck that, I'm done. Let's do this. And he goes in there and just gruesomely murders dudes, like burning them. At one point, I think he's doing like a flying cross with his hands out and he's chopping them.
Okay, it's murdered Superman where he spins around and he burns
the flying cross.
So instead of doing that, he opens his hands and he's got the open palm. So
and he's chopping through people,
chopping dudes in half.
Yeah, you see
that one dude, he chops his face off horizontally.
I called it the flying cross.
Yeah,
and he's doing that.
And he chops him off at the nose. You see, like, remember in Ichi the Killer where he chops people directly in half and they fall to pieces? I liked how they very novel approach. He chops the head like a samurai where it's across the nose and then you got the two pieces flying up. I just thought that was cute.
He murders everybody, and then this last guy, because apparently this happens in 4 seconds.
Say it
right. 4 seconds. What?
Murder.
He murders them. And apparently this happens in 4 seconds because the last terrorist is like, what's going on? And begins to fire on his hostages. And Supreme grabs him and melts his fucking face. Like,
with heat vision,
Just starts hitting
him. Then he like bore into his eyes with the heat vision until he scanned
it. I saw his face and I immediately thought, hey, look, it's Raiders of the Lost Ark when their faces are melting off. Because that's what it looked like. His face is being melted off. And then the whole team runs in and all the teams run in. They're like, damn. And there's one guy, Cougar.
When Bloodstrike is saying, damn, you've done something really harsh.
There's one team member who's like, well, he did what we all thought should be done. Like, he's got the balls to do it.
That's Heavy Metal, right, that does that?
No.
Was it Bloodstrike?
It was one of the other teams.
yeah, that were like, he did what needed to be done. Everybody else was like, whoa, dude, like, how are we going to explain this shit?
Like, do we want this guy on our team?
Yeah, because yeah, well, everybody's kind of like, that's a little hardcore, because no one, like, they didn't rescue anyone, or they didn't keep any of the terrorists. They're all killed. What happened after that?
And they never tell you, like, who hired these guys, why they were doing it.
It's just thrown up in the air.
Chopped in half by Supreme.
And then I think that's the end of issue two. Like, he melts the dude's face. Issue three. So then we're going into four.
Before we get into that, too, I want to point out that at the end of issue two, we see the Catellans, the cat people that Chrome and Cougar are part of.
Those guys, they're coming to Earth. They've been waiting out in space. That's right.
I forgot. They'd already been coming. They were coming to Earth, we thought, looking for Combat and Photon, right? And they're led by Captain Kirk, whose name dropped once again here. And so they also reference, this is Supreme of the Maxio campaign. So you know something's being built there. But then the Catellans never show up for the rest of the story arc. So they're just sort of there waiting to be seen. Apparently they're going to turn up in a story called The Night, which I think turned up in like Strikefall or something.
I think there was a character called Nightmare.
There was Nightmare, yeah.
He was one of them.
It remains to be seen what's going to happen with these dudes. They just keep foreshadowing.
We're still waiting for that story arc to release. Yeah. We're still waiting for that story to be released.
Toward the end of this one, we get two things that are important. One, we see that Skyraker has his own ship.
Yeah, I was about to say, Space Batman has his own ship.
Dionycus, which has its own sentient intelligence that it controls and downloads a bunch of information on Supreme about his adventures in outer space.
And not just that, I think then they also get some biological when he scraped them with a sword.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, because they're trying to figure if he's real Supreme. Too,
he's got all these weapons hanging up in his spaceship, so like fetishistic, interesting
weaponry. I thought Very Predator.
Very Predator, yes.
Very Predator.
Well, you know what I actually thought of is Star Trek Voyager did a ripoff of Predator where they did that same thing with all the weapons hanging up, and so that's what I thought of. This is like third-rate Predator ripoff.
But wait a minute, but so the ship is they're trying to figure out if that's the real Supreme even.
Well, not just that, they call it, is he the one? No, he's not the one. So I don't know if he means that he's looking for Supreme or he's looking for another dude, but I don't think that Skyraker ever appears after the end of the story arc, so this foreshadowing never amounts to anything.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, yeah. Because Skyraker at this point, I think, is kind of cool. Like, no. He's dumb looking. He's dumb looking.
No.
But they build him up so much that I kind of like him a little bit.
No.
But the other thing is that Chrome is introduced. Who's Chrome? And it's spelled K-H-R-O-M.
Oh.
K-H-R-O-M-E.
So this is a villain we're supposed to, I guess, assume is a badass. I'm thinking Thanos level?
Something like that. I was leaning toward maybe Mongul.
Okay, I can see that.
He was kind of, because they make a point at various points in the story to say that he is physically stronger than Supreme. And I'm trying to think of, who's your parallel to Superman? They did that a lot with Mongul in DC Comics Presents, that he was supposed to be physically more powerful. Yeah,
what happened? What do you get?
And he flies around and he conquers planets and shit. And it's like, okay, so I guess Chrome is sort of like Mongul.
But
what does he look like, though? He doesn't look like a Mongul at all.
Oh, no, he looks like Space Batman.
You think Chrome looks like Space Batman?
Yeah.
He's sort of like an Oni.
They got the same fucking Wolverine mask shit going on.
They both have a mouthful of I don't know about both of them, but Chrome has a mouthful of razor sharp teeth. He's got a yellow mask with points on it, kind of like Wolverine or Batman. Yeah. Does he have red eyes or black eyes or some shit like that? I think he's got like a purple uniform. He's just a big swollen dude. Scary claws, right? Doesn't he have claws?
No.
He's just a big generic
bad guy. The same.
But he was referenced in Youngblood. At one point, Combat says, by the ghost of Chrome, I think it was.
Oh, really?
So again, they keep making these references to the connections that Supreme and Chrome have to the Catellans. They're big deals with these guys.
So like deities?
Yeah, the Catellans are basically the Kund.
So are they like deities to them, or?
They're going to get into that. In issue four, we get the full backstory. There was a race called the Torgon, who I don't know who they are.
I know this part. They were battling and Supreme.
They had a war fleet that was fighting the Catellan. Yeah. The Torgon war fleet is attacking the Catellans. Supreme is working with the Catellans to fight them, but another alien war race that they're protecting, the Maxians, aren't confident they're going to be able to turn back the Torgons. So a Maxian delegation goes to the Chrome Conclave to ask for their help. Chrome ends up joining with Supreme to turn back the Torgon war fleet. Chrome becomes the emperor of the planet they're protecting to make sure that the Torgons never
cause any more planet.
He goes to their home world and blows it up. Then Emperor Chrome begins to expand his empire for the good of the universe to control it, which causes some static with Supreme, because the whole point was, I guess he was sort of like the commies. They helped us fight the Nazis and then turned around and became our mortal enemies for the rest of the century. So Supreme and Chrome end up having this conflict, and it appears like Chrome and his forces retreat. And then at some point, Supreme comes to Earth, and the whole thing was a ploy for Chrome to follow Supreme to Earth so he could destroy his homeworld. They break in, and there's a reporter named Maxine Winslow who's reporting from Dulles Airport about the battle that's going on between Chrome and
Heavy Metal. Yeah, because I think at one point Chrome is trying to punch a hole through the Earth.
And Chrome grabs a plane that was landing at Dulles Airport.
With a kid.
Yeah.
Mommy. Yeah, there's a kid and a mom, and she's like, Mommy, what is going on? And he picks up the plane.
No, but yet, he's like, oh, look, it's Supreme. He'll save us. And then the Chrome proceeds to smash the plane against Supreme and kill everybody in the plane, including the kid. And Maxine Winslow is talking about how Supreme being on Earth is a way bigger threat than any of these things that he's fighting. And we're scared to death of what's going to happen because of all the casualties that keep occurring around Supreme. So I'm curious to see if she's going to continue to be this critical presence in the Supreme books. I don't remember.
But I know that one scene there during the battle, Supreme is trying to get his hands on him, and he's like, your force field can't hold me back. And he's like, you're right, at one time it couldn't, but now I have a dimensional shifting ability or some shit that kind of traps Supreme, and he teleports out, I think?
Yeah.
Like, I was kind of confused.
My understanding is that it was never the real Chrome, that it was actually a clone Chrome. Supreme's trying to fight his way through the force field, and then once he realizes that it's not the real Chrome, he kills the clone and flies to Earth to fight Chrome, who's already been fighting heavy metal. And he basically kills Decibel.
What happens is Morph is coming down as a whale with arms, which then Chrome grabs him and slams him away, which smashes Decibel against a wall. So Decibel and Morph are out of the game.
I like how you're calling him Decibel, though he's a math-based superhero.
I want to call him Quiet Riot, but and then
by the way, his name is Frank Herbert, which I think is supposed to be a reference to the Dune writer.
Okay.
And his daughter, Francine Herbert, visits him while he's convalescing, while they're trying to save his life, basically.
And they say,
and she makes a reference about, that's all I need. Where's my father? That's all the information I need from your kind. And they're like wondering, does she mean that she hates aliens or mixed people, like a mixed race group, or superheroes? And they don't
ever. Well, they're like, every bone in his body's been broken, but he's still trying to survive. Yeah, no, he's dead. He's just calling what it is. He's dead.
If you're going to kill anybody in heavy metal, it's going to be Decibel.
Decibel.
They decimated him. They decibelated him.
And then Morph, apparently, they had to put him in a tank of goo because he was so wounded.
Because Menagerie was created by Gate. So he's an artificial life form. And he becomes destabilized by the action that he's seen. So they have to put him in the...
And Riot is okay.
Riot's okay, yeah.
And Space Batman is okay. But
Sky Raider,
Space Batman decides he's going to help out Supreme take out Chrome.
But worth noting... We're in the fifth issue of a six-issue story arc, and midway through this thing, they decide we're just going to start foreshadowing all the shit that's going to happen in the series to come. So out of nowhere, you go off with Heavy Metal as they're gathering themselves and healing themselves, and Supreme is presumably still fighting Chrome somewhere, but we've lost that thread a while back. And then we see the future version of Youngblood traveling in a time bubble, which again shows the Legion parallel.
You've got Die Hard with boobs.
You've got Supreme's daughter. You've got some version
Wolverine,
of Cougar.
Some Wolverine dude.
And Cougar, yeah. And then some other dude or two. I don't remember how many there were. They just show up out of nowhere. They're like traveling through time to go get Supreme because they need him for some bullshit.
Yeah.
And then who else shows up? Thor from Mount Glittertinden above Jotunheim in Norway.
I remember telling you this, that I thought it was really stupid that issue felt like they crammed a bunch of shit into it, where Thor just appears. Lightning strikes
Describe
a rock.
Describe Thor in the Extreme Universe, please.
Well, his hammer's a lot longer. He has a longer...
He's got a full sledgehammer, but it's also kind of got a weird angle to it.
He's a Scandinavian who's flying, screaming.
He's got the long red hair.
I'm coming to get you,
which
Loki.
Which I think is in that from the North mythology, he's supposed to actually have red hair.
I've always known a blonde.
He's got like a 6-inch long soul patch Fu Manchu thing going on.
I didn't notice that part.
Yeah, it's like 6 inches long. And then he's got all this Liefeldian armor as well.
Yeah.
So why is Thor suddenly showing up and smashing mountains?
I just thought it was really weird to like fucking bring Thor into this book with no buildup. It's just like, oh, by the way, lightning struck a rock and Thor appeared.
Right.
Like there's no Asgard. There's no
anything.
It felt like we were supposed to assume we knew the backgrounds of all these characters. Like, oh yeah, by the way, we do have Asgardians.
Tired of everybody saying that he was ripping off superhero characters. Decided to go public domain.
It doesn't matter, dude. Maybe they just
wanted to have somebody that they thought would be at a power level to where we could go somewhere from Chrome. Because it's just how powerful Chrome is here. They want to let you know that we do have another powerful guy to fight Supreme after this.
They're just shoveling all this shit
into
one book.
It is shoved in.
It made no sense.
It's distracting. They should have just ended with the fifth issue and then picked up with these guys in later issues.
You literally had three arcs here all jammed into one book.
And I think they had put like one tangent after another. So it's like, so by the time you get get back to Supreme versus Chrome, you're like, oh, we're still doing this story?
Yeah, yeah. I honestly, when Thor appeared, I thought the battle must be over now, or Thor's going to show up and help in the battle, or nope. It's just, we want to show you that we have a Thor now here. Okay. No. The Youngbloods are showing up, right? They're going to help him in some kind of time thing. Nope. They're just showing up.
They're just foreshadowing some shit that's going to happen.
Yeah, we're just getting ready for the last page of the last part of the story. So,
but it's still the penultimate issue. So it's like, do we need this right now? Maybe do, like, they could have done the Cotellan foreshadowing in one issue, the time bubble Youngblood in the next issue, and then Thor in the issue after that, but they don't do that. They put them like back to back, and it's like, oh wait, we're still okay.
Oh, we still got Chrome. We still got Chrome.
We're basically on issue 6 now.
I was kind of confused when they came up with the plan to set up all those gamma things.
Before we even get to that, though, don't forget about Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton. You had Tricky Dick, Jimmy Carter, Reagan, and Bush.
Was Ford there?
No, I didn't see Ford.
Yeah, I think Ford
Clinton was on the phone.
Reagan was there.
And Clinton talked to Jimmy Carter. Tricky Dick is looking out the window. So is Bush, and Reagan's in the background. I remember because I looked out. I know all these presidents.
If I remember, it was Bush. He was like all for bombing. He wanted to bomb Chrome.
Where are their home planets from? Nothing fixes anything like carpet bombing or some bullshit like that. I was like, oh, okay.
And Jimmy Carter was just telling Bill Clinton, whatever you do, you have our full support.
Which I was kind of confused, like, now are they all president at the same time, or are they just
big event that all the ex-presidents got together, sort of like in the old Saturday Night Live, the cartoon.
The ex-presidents, struck by a hurricane powered dose of radiation while appearing at a celebrity golf tournament, our four former presidents are charged with powers and strength, rendering them all the more extraordinary.
Yeah, but
so they all teamed up to deal with Chrome.
It felt really weird to bring them all in one spot.
Right. Well, because this is too big a challenge for one president. We have to bring the entire ex-president's team.
So now they're like the shaman from fucking Authority, where he can talk to the ex, like all the ex-shamans from the past.
Or was that the doctor that could do that?
Was it the doctor? Oh, you're right. I'm sorry, it was the doctor. So now, apparently, the presidents can now go back and speak to past presidents for their knowledge.
The super team.
Oh, wow.
The Smigel cartoons that they used to do.
Of course, Supreme.
Bill Clinton comes to the decision. He's going to contact Rome, who is the guy who's exactly like Graves and like Temple. And God, these names just started like, okay, could you give me a name that's not a noun or a verb? So Rome runs Bloodstrike, and he tells Manipulator, the money man behind Bloodstrike, it's time to take down Supreme. Take him down hard. Which, from Bill Clinton, you're kind of wondering, so do you mean to fight him? Or something else. I don't know if this is like a sex thing with Bill, you know?
Not unless there's a cigar involved.
Actually, he was smoking a cigar, I think. I think he was smoking a cigar while
I didn't see him, but unless there's a cigar involved, I don't think it's a sexual thing.
Also, at some point, Graves contacts Temple, but because Graves wants to do something with Supreme, and he thinks that Temple's going to help him make that happen. A subplot that I don't think ever becomes anything. But you were talking about the Gates plot with
the
Space
Gamma Bomb. Well, no, they like put all these gamma radiators or I don't know, man. They somehow create a chamber with all these nuclear devices with time dispersers, and somehow Supreme is supposed to get Chrome in there.
Yeah, he pushes him through 30 stories of Gates building, which is apparently so well constructed that even though there's tectonic plates shifting, causing earthquakes along the eastern seaboard, this building is just fine.
And at the same time, they're all worried about what's his name, the Luthor.
Grizzlock escapes in the midst of all the earthquakes.
And they're all freaking out because...
what could he do now that he's free?
Oh, God. Yes, what could he do? And so Supreme gets Chrome into this device, and Space Batman tells him, lock the device. And they're like, we can't. If we do, he won't make it out. And he's like, he knows that. And he slams the thing shut. And they make sure to tell the whole time, anytime he's spoken, everyone's like, he's always full of rage and anger. That's the only way. Like, anytime he communicates, that's what you get, the vibe. And all of a sudden, but this one time, it was a vibe of respect. And I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, why not? Like, I've known Space Batman for 4 issues, yeah. And they close this shielding up. And it begins to melt, and people are freaking out and exploding. They assume both of them are dead, and all of a sudden, Supreme pops up butt naked. And they made sure to do a nice drawing of him lengthwise, where he just got bare ass. I think all he has are his cuffs on his costume.
They don't want us to know if he's Supreme all the way down just yet.
Well, I don't know. Supreme's costume is pretty tight. I don't think he's Supreme all the way down. Inadequacies there. Everyone's like, don't get too close to him. He's white hot. I think didn't they say that at one point?
It's something like, he's radioactive.
Yeah, no, they said he's white hot or something. Yeah. And I'm like, really, really? I'm white hot. Yes, I'm burning to the core. So he turns around and Chrome is there, but Chrome is missing, like his top layers of skin have melted off. Because I think at one point he was able to rip off his armor. That was a big deal. His armor was protected.
So Chrome was generating power enough that, like, the equivalent of a star, and he was pretending like he'd always had that power, and he was just holding it back in reserve because he didn't want to show Supreme all that he had. Supreme realized that wasn't in Chrome's character, that he had that power previously. He'd used it in their first battles against one another when Supreme pushed back his empire. So he uses his vision to detect that there's a power source giving him all that energy, flies up to the spaceship.
That's right.
Destroys the spaceship.
Batman's ship is fighting it first before he gets there.
But he relents because it realizes what Supreme's doing. Supreme destroys the warship of Chrome, takes Chrome into the nuclear reactor. And inside the reactor, there's all these devices that are basically altering Chrome's armor. The armor is no longer defending him because it's basically pulling the armor and him with it in all these different directions. And it essentially rips him to pieces. So when he crawls out of the chamber, his entire bottom half is gone. They have intricately drawn intestines and lungs hanging out of the back of him. The spine is sticking out. Half his face is like melting off. And he's like, Supreme, I'm not done with you yet.
And then Supreme does his fucking eye blast and just blows his fucking head off. Murders him. And then that's it.
That's pretty, well, except for the part where he gets his costume back on again.
And he decides not to join heavy metal.
And he's like, but dude, we talked about you exploring the genetic engineering. And Supreme's like, nah, this ain't my bag, deuce. Yeah.
And you find out that Decimal's probably not going to make it. Morph is going to be in the tank for a while. Riot went back to the hood.
Don't forget that Riot got a makeover, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And it's kind of a shame because even though he was lame looking, at least he was distinctive because he had dreads coming out of his blue mask and he had a blue and white uniform. Temple makes him go to get redesigned and compliments him on his suit. From there, he gets like the high top fade and he gets like a sleek armored uniform that looks more like a super speedster as designed by Rob Liefeld. But he actually is more like generic Liefeld type character, so he doesn't stand out nearly as much. And then he goes back to the hood and he's just sort of like chilling as a soloist for a while.
Space Batman is just hanging out at his ship right now.
Right.
He got nothing else to do.
And the main thing that they did too is they were always fighting amongst each other who's going to be the leader. Yeah. Mostly between Decimal like a big deal. And Skyraker. Yeah.
Which I figured would have been Space Batman. He seemed like the more badass out of the group.
And at the very end, future Youngblood shows up and asks Dad for help. And he's like, Dad, what the fuck? Surprise. Clearly, Rob Liefeld was the creator of Supreme, and he co-plotted the series, but most of the writing and the art was done by Brian Murray. Brian Murray's primary credit in comics was doing like the first couple of years of Young All-Stars, which was a spinoff book of All-Star Squadron at DC, the JSA. Okay. Yeah. Basically, when they got rid of Earth 2, and they were trying to figure out who was and who wasn't a Golden Age hero, because DC kept the fact that they had superheroes in World War II, they just didn't necessarily want their icons being a part of that. So they pulled out Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, Aquaman. And so Roy Thomas came up with these analogs: Fury, Iron Monroe, Seawolf, I think it was called, Neptune Perkins, Dan the Dynamite. And so Brian Murray drew that. It was a pretty boring looking book. It didn't ever catch on. I think it got canceled after a couple of years. But Brian Murray did the majority of that book. I think he'd also gotten to start at Continuity Studios, probably doing ad work for them. And he did a few odds and ends titles for them. Nothing really big, just like an issue here, issue there. And of course, he colored most of the early Extreme books. And to great acclaim, if you read the latest columns, they're always talking about what great job he did on the coloring. And Michel Fife has come in and talked about what a great job he did on those books. After Supreme, he did like the first year's worth of Supreme stories, and then he essentially left comics for the most part. He went on to working in Hollywood. He became a concept artist and storyboarder for Hollywood. He's worked on several CSI series, Grey's Anatomy. He worked on the first two Riddick movies, including being the lead illustrator and designer for the Chronicles of Riddick. He did episodes of Star Trek Enterprise. He worked on Freddy vs. Jason, Sliders, Babylon 5. So this guy's got a whole career, fuck comics, basically. I thought he did some really nice looking artwork. I thought it was an interesting combination of the Neil Adams style and the Rob Liefeld style. Liefeld actually inked the first issue of Supreme. He actually would find like good camera angles. He would always find like interesting perspectives. The dude could do perspective well, so he was always putting the camera in weird ass places so you could see the characters from all these different angles. Mostly good anatomy. Sometimes the Supreme anatomy just got completely away from him, where he'd have this enormous, ridiculous body and a tiny little head. Yeah. Got some of that late 90s Liefeld action on, like when he drew Captain America or Dynamo. Mm-hmm. But overall, I thought it was a good looking book. And about halfway through, Chris Ivey, who had done a lot of inking for Marvel, I think he was one of the main guys who inked Dwayne Turner on stuff like Cage. He came on, and I thought he had a really nice style for the book. Danny Meek did some stuff with it as well. And I think the art holds up better than most of the early Image stuff in terms of the actual storytelling quality and anatomy and things like that. But especially the camera angles. The dude was willing to take a lot of chance with perspective. The Image guys had a nasty tendency. They always wanted to shoot everything straight on.
Yeah.
They had the cinematography of Kevin Smith, and Brian Murray challenged that.
I just thought it was a cool take on Black Adam mixed with Superman.
I really think Geoff Johns' Black Adam has a lot of Supreme in his DNA.
I thought Black Adam was always like that, though.
No, man. Yeah, look, Black Adam, people don't remember Black Adam. Black Adam was a Golden Age character, and he was the evil version of Captain Marvel, but he only appeared like one or two stories in the Golden Age. I think they brought him back once or twice in the 70s, and then they brought him back a few times in the early 80s, including in the Shazam A New Beginning miniseries that was his first post-crisis story. I think that was one of the first things he did with Shazam after DC bought the rights outright to Captain Marvel from Fawcett, or whoever the rights holder was. Black Adam really wasn't a big thing. You know, he was just the guy who fought Captain Marvel. He was a supervillain with Captain Marvel's powers, but in terms of him being like the dark hero, the dark Egyptian hero, that started to get played with in the Power Shazam to a small degree, but really the one who sold it was Geoff Johns. And Geoff Johns was kind of writing Black Adam as Namor, that sort of anti-hero guy, this guy who's violent.
Okay, for some reason, I thought maybe Supreme was kind of a take on him.
No, I think it's quite the opposite. I think that Geoff Johns probably read too many Supreme comics growing up, and he turned Black Adam into Supreme.
To me, that was the cool thing about Supreme, was he was this arrogant
Rob Liefeld Superman.
Yeah.
And so he's super violent and super pompous and has super questionable motives, and I think it's fucking awesome. How did you come to Supreme? When did you read Supreme?
That's the funny thing. I didn't read this stuff. The first Supreme book I read was before Alan Moore. I knew Alan Moore wrote Supreme, but I didn't even read that. The first issue I remember reading is that one. Is it Supreme or Majestic? No, it's Majestic. The End of Time.
The Alan Moore story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a Wildstorm Spotlight one shot.
So when was the first
one? I know the first thing I read of Supreme was, again, going into the quarter boxes at my first shop, was a miniseries called The Legend of Supreme. It had art by Geoff Johnson, who I was getting into at that time period. I'd always kind of like been like, Geoff Johnson, because he'd been doing Wonder Man, and I thought that was kind of a funky looking book. I didn't like how he did noses, and everybody was maybe a little too skinny for the time period. But Keith Giffen and Robert Lauren Fleming were writing it, and that was the creative team of Ambush Bug, who I loved to pieces. And so I figured I'd give it a try out of the quarter boxes, and I thought The Legend of Supreme miniseries was fucking awesome. I totally fucking dug it. And so we had a bunch of regular Supreme issues in the back issue ends. So I started picking those up and reading these first six issues of Supreme. I think the first time I read it, I wasn't very into it after the third issue. I liked it when Supreme was fighting all these different characters, and I especially love the third issue when he's chopping people in half with his fucking karate chops. I thought that was fucking rad. But the four, five, and six, I wasn't that into. Rereading them today, though, and reading them all in one like sitting, essentially, I think those first six issues are fucking awesome. It's everything you wanted from Image Comics. It was like the perfect Superman for a 13-year-old. When you're younger, you want a more pure-hearted, safe, friendly hero. When you're older, you want a more moral character, somebody you could get behind. But when you're 13 years old, you want Superman to fucking karate chop people in half. And this book gave you that. I love what a fucking asshole Supreme is. I love what a ridiculous, violent power fantasy it was. I love the gore in this fucking book. It's like Michelle Fife's working on that Brutalist miniseries where he's playing up how rough the Keith Giffen period of Bloodstrike was. But Supreme predates Bloodstrike and got ridiculously violent with really striking anatomical detail by Brian Murray. Liefeld would do gore, and what it would basically be is like a hero with blood covering on them. Where Murray's getting in there and he's showing like Mars attacks level decomposition, instant radiation, body eruptions and shit. It's so fucking gory. It's so fucking brutal. This would have been so my jam at age 13. It's a morally reprehensible but totally fucking badass comic book. I love it today more than I loved it back in the 90s. I fucking dug the shit out of this book. We've had kind of a streak of not so great Image comics to cover, and I just had such a joy reading these fucking Supreme books.
I guess I would say the first real Supreme I read was the Alan Moore stuff.
Yeah, and we'll get there.
And that's some really weird shit. But I really liked it. And I think I read it more because Alan Moore wrote it, not so much was, I want to read Supreme. It was, I wanted to read Alan Moore's take on Supreme. And I think, honestly, I collected the first few issues, but I never read them. I couldn't get into them. And even now, I mean, I remember hearing about them, and I remember talking to people talking about, Supreme, and he's like, an arrogant asshole, and, he's just an asshole to everybody. And I was like, I see, I mean, that seems kind of cool, I guess. And I think I read maybe the first issue, maybe some backstories and some other issues, and just never clicked.
I read the first issue of Alan Moore's Run of Supreme because I was curious what he was going to do. By the time Alan Moore was taking it over, I'd become disenchanted because they were not able to continue the momentum started in these first six issues, nor what they had done with the Legend of Supreme miniseries. The actual core series was not very good, and I read most of the issues up to Alan Moore's taking it over, and Alan Moore decided to go into a hard Silver Age fanciful direction.
Yeah.
And I read that first issue and was like, nah, this isn't what I'm into. I wanted my ultraviolet badass version of Superman. If you watch Man of Steel, that's kind of a Supreme movie. Like, if you look at how critical the people are of Superman, the 9/11 scale tragedy that occurs when Superman's battling the Kryptonians, and all the complicated moral ramifications of these kind of power levels being played out across the world, I think that Zack Snyder would have been the perfect Supreme director. And to some degree, he directed a Supreme movie, but unfortunately, he had Superman in it, and that's what ruins it for so many people. Yeah, I think the character's awesome. And again, we referenced my Image Comics jam, and I got Supreme in it. And the reason why I chose Supreme for that jam was because I feel like that's the most important character that Rob Liefeld created and owns. I think that above all of his other creations, even Shaft, his beloved Shaft from Youngblood, I think that Supreme is the most important and the most long-lived, the most impactful of Liefeld's characters that he still owns. Obviously, Cable and Deadpool and even Domino in the public sphere, in publishing history, supersede Supreme. But because of the artistic merit of Supreme and the fact that he is something, he filled a void in comics that didn't exist before him. Supreme was the prototype type for the evil Superman that you saw in Black Adam, in Mark Waid's Irredeemable. To some degree, he was like Public Spirit from Martial Law, but he kind of did things his own way. I always felt like Public Spirit was...
That's a very good point. I didn't think about that. That's very Supreme.
He was pumped up, but he never had the kind of... He wasn't at the levels of power.
No, Supreme he was very had. Arrogant.
I do kind of feel like Supreme was sort of a riff on Public Spirit, but...
Dude, I'm ashamed of myself that I didn't catch that.
Even the costumes are similar.
I'm such a huge, you know, martial law fan.
Yeah, they both have the white hair and everything.
That's right. That's right. I mean, fuck, he tried to kill his own chick. That's right. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, put me down as a Supreme fan. Put me down as a fan of these issues. I wish they'd put this out in trade. I would really like to buy a trade of the first 6 years of Supreme. I dug this shit, man. I liked Skyraker. You know, I wanted to see more shit with Skyraker. I think Space Batman would be good if they eventually turned him into a villain for Supreme. I don't want to see him as a
villain. I like the lead up where they're like, this isn't the real Supreme. We'll get back to that.
Yeah.
And there's a scene also, if I remember correctly, where Supreme is actually x-raying him, and he's like,
he's got this weird alien anatomy.
And so I was kind of like, well, I guess they're going to go somewhere with this where eventually Space Batman has to fight Space Superman and see what happens. Chrome really didn't defeat him. I mean, it was a nuke that went off that kind of beat both of them. And Space Batman was the only one that fucking carved him up a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, because even Supreme was like, oh shit, like I'm bleeding.
Yeah. So. Well, but he never knocked out Supreme. Chrome actually knocked out Supreme at one point. So
Space Batman was ready to fight anybody. He motherfucker just wanted to start stabbing people.
One of the interesting things with Heavy Metal, it was clear that Supreme was so much more powerful than anybody in Youngblood, and that Heavy Metal could go toe-to-toe with those power levels. So it's pretty clear that these guys are actually more powerful than the Youngblood teams, even though they were the... Several maybe decibel, yes. The other ones, particularly Skyraker, was obviously at a pretty high power level. And yet, to the best of my knowledge, none of those characters ever appeared again. If you read the letters columns, the fans fucking hated Heavy Metal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was funny because I think that the reason why Heavy Metal existed, perhaps in part, two things. One is I think they probably felt like Supreme needed somebody to bounce off of. They was at a power level to where they could function alongside him in combat. But also, I think that they maybe doubted that a Superman-type character would fly, no pun intended, in the Image Comics universe. So I think that the intention was that maybe they would just incorporate him into a Heavy Metal book if it came to that later on. If you read the letter columns, everybody's like, Supreme is awesome. Supreme is so much more powerful that he doesn't need to be a part of any team. They already established that by having him beat up on Youngblood and reject them. Why is he hanging out with fucking Heavy Metal? I kind of doubt that the intention was for him to just up and quit Heavy Metal with the sixth issue, but I think that the letters column made it clear how much the fans didn't want that. Either they intentionally set it up so that he would leave Heavy Metal after those early issues, or they just realized, oh, we're fucking up by having this Heavy Metal team, and they just drop that like a hot potato. They are a dumb looking group, but I think that Space Batman should have at least hung around and been a villain of his or something.
And my bad, Decibel. I just realized now I keep calling him Decibel.
That's why I made that joke, the math face superhero.
Yeah, I snapped it. I was like, wait, I thought I was saying Decibel. They did leave it tailored for new stories. I mean, Decibel's daughter, he might survive. Morph is in the tank. Space Batman's out there. They didn't need this team. This made no sense. just more characters to throw out there.
Like I said, I dug it. I think I love these Supreme comics. Supreme's among my favorite Image characters.
We were listening to some music you wanted to listen to earlier, and you got really weird fucking taste, man.
I do have weird taste sometimes, but I think Supreme is fucking rad. And
I like Supreme. I just don't like this Supreme so far. So
I prefer the Supreme to the Silver Age.
Past I might actually read.
Although I haven't read a lot of it. I've read a little bit.
So you're talking shit again.
It's Alan Moore. I'm not a big Alan Moore guy. So.
What an asshole. I'm going to try a couple of more Supremes just to see if it picks up or what direction it goes.
You and me will get back together for Legend of Supreme. I'm going to see about... we have some folks that listen to the show that would like to participate. I haven't been able to set that up yet because I think that you and I should explore the first stories of these characters. And then I can go and talk to these other guys later on. But probably some guys who have more of a interest in a lot of these properties. There's a lot of these, especially the Liefeld stuff, you're just playing out into. So I don't see you wanting to deal with second arcs, third arcs. So you and I will reteam for Legend of Supreme, and I'll see about bringing in and by the way, folks, if anybody wants to participate with me in a Supreme follow-up episode, please chime in now so I can get your name on the list, and I'll get in touch with you down the line.
All two of you.
I think Supreme's got a little bit more of a fan base than that. We're about to find out when we get the response to this episode, though.
Yeah, but next time when we get time, if you want, I don't mind doing a Paper Girl on this. I'm really enjoying the shit out of that book.
I'm not sure if Paper Girl works for Spawnometer. I think that might be more of an Underguides thing.
No. Yeah. No, this would be something else you do.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, I like doing the Image stuff on Spawnometer, but it feels like a lot of that newer stuff, it's got more of an indie vibe to it, and, you know, it'd be good to get Mac in there if possible. But, Dad, we can definitely cover Paper Girls. I desperately need to get work done on Underguides anyway. I hate the huge gaps between those. It's not going to be as huge as last time. We had like a 2-year gap on Underguides between the episodes where, you know, it's just I need to finish up some stuff and then we'll definitely record something. And it looks like Paper Girl's the way to go, so you just finish watching that.
We know, Jared, you're supposed to leave them wanting more.
Yeah, well, maybe not wanting for years. I think people kind of move on over that kind of time frame.
So let's do this.
Okay. Facebook, Derek William Crabb and Keith G. Baker gave us likes. On Twitter, we had Lovin' from the 1/8 Sage, Andy at All-Star DC Comics, Backseat Directors, The Bat Boy, Biko Django, Bone Dragon Comics, Carlos Digital, Cash Flag, Cerebus Film, Charlton Hero, Chris W. Brandon, The Cinebud Podcast, Coffee and Comics, D. Julian, David Bland, Denise Soderberg, Dr. G. Nerdologist, Dorkness to Light, Ed Moore Jr. at Miskatonic and Teal Productions, Emmanuel Sarah, Fan Holes Podcast, Geekery with Dante D., The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, History of Comics on Film, The Hoopers, Into the Weird Podcast, It's Plastic Man, Jared Albright, the Yard Sale Artist, Jeffrey Brown, Jennifer DeRoss, Jim Cripps, Joe Crawford, John M. Wilson, Justice First Dawn, Kaiser Leo, Kashif Ali, Kichi Baker, Kelechuku KCW, Christados, Kyle Benning Likes Comics, Longbox Crusade, Lost in Time, Matthew Gordon, Max Romero, Merch, Nethead, Norrin Rad, Odell Abner Dracula, Paul D. Nolan, Pico 420, Podcast Partners, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Ryan Daly of the Cheers Cast, Sean Michael Ortega, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Sean Phillips, Slangwood Resists, South Jetty Sam, Spider-Man Bot IW, Steve Sellers, Tim Price, Toll Booth, Varangian Vigilante, Warlord Worlds, and Xenozoic Xenophiles. Not Top 10 said, Kaboom, are you a fan critic of Rob Liefeld's Youngblood? Yeah, I think we qualify.
Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me too, I finally got a copy of the Image, The Road to Independence book that Tomorrow's put out. I haven't wanted to go too deep into the creators like we did on some of the earlier episodes because I'm trying to actually make sure we get like the core of the series set up, like the core books that the founders put out, and kind of get a sense of the Image Comics universe. And then once we get a little deeper into the stories, we can go more into like the behind the scenes type stuff, where I was trying to do it all at once in those earlier episodes and it just made for editing hassles, and it made the show more about the creators than their creations, and I kind of wanted to have a nice mix. But yeah, once it comes time to start addressing some of the more behind the scenes stuff, that'll be a great resource to have. I was tossing through it earlier today. It looks pretty badass.
Okay, cool. I'm going to check it out.
Randy Andrews writes, oh, by the way, he runs a Gen 13 podcast, so at some point I'm going to have to tap him for a little help, I'm imagining, in the future. I know I haven't posted much lately, been busy with work, school, and life. Don't worry, I just picked up the Wildstorm 25th anniversary book. Can't wait to read it. You haven't read that one, have you?
No.
History of Comics on Film put up a signed print of Spawn, thanking Greg Capullo for his signature. He also advertised us and let everybody know that Spawn-O-Meter podcast rocks, as he put it.
Oh, We'll have to put a picture of that, the number one issue that I got signed by Todd McFarlane when I got to meet him.
Yeah, and we'll also put a picture of the signed print that Derek got done on the blog.
Cool.
John M. Wilson is going back to our older episodes. He just listened to episode 3, The Dragon Archives, wrote, listening to some Image history and Spawn talk. Really love the insight into pre-Image Dragon. My knowledge of the character before 1992 was scant and inaccurate. Side note, if it matters 12 months later, Youngblood can be a plural to refer to the members of the team. I saw it several times in these early Image issues. I think that's because Mac was taking you to task for saying Youngblood or Youngbloods, okay. I think. Yeah. Well, and the thing is, too, we still come across this as we look at the early comics. Youngblood and Young, you know, I don't even know about the Youngbloods plural, but according to Wilson, that was the case. It really is a generic term for superpowered beings in the early Image comics. So I think you can play with that however you like.
Huh, I never thought about that.
Let's see. I was trying to tease out the mystery episode last time, episode 10, because I knew that nobody was going to know who Infinity was, but hardly anybody bit. The only person who actually even tried to guess with Keechee Baker, he offered, is it going to be the ins and outs of Cherry Pop-Tart? You're familiar with Cherry Pop-Tart.
Who?
Cherry Pop-Tart?
Oh, yeah, that porn comic, right?
Right.
Got that right. Yeah, I remember that was really big in Omaha.
Yeah, the cat dancer, sure.
Yeah, and then Two Girls, Two Nights, my first porn comic that my uncle gave me.
Which
and
I think was relayed in one of our One Song Each episodes.
Yeah, that was really graphic, though. And I remember, those are the only ones that really come to my mind that were sold in comic shops.
Yeah, and actually had, like, continuing stories and yeah. Prominent characters and stuff.
Yeah, true.
Well, didn't you, so that didn't happen with Birdland?
Oh, that's right, Birdland. Yeah, but see, I was reading Love and Rocket, and then I didn't get into Birdland until later. And that was by accident. I just assumed it was a continuation of Love and Rocket. And it is in kind of a weird way, but it gets really weird. Birdland gets really fucking weird. I don't think I ever finished that series either.
And I'm also remembering, too, when Hal Jordan went nuts and killed all the other Green Lanterns, and we all pretend like that never happened now, supposedly. Bill Willingham drew at least one of those issues, and he was like the first celebrity comic book person that I met at a convention. And somehow we managed to talk about his porn comic, Ironwood, at one point. So that was another one that was semi-prominent.
Right. That's until, didn't Penthouse and Playboy and Hustler all start having like comic book magazine wars at a while around that time?
Yeah, but that was later. We're talking like I think we're talking like late 80s, early 2000s, kind of like when Image got started, where that was closer to the big implosion of the comic industry in general.
Okay.
That was like one of the last big hurrahs where they were throwing money at comics thinking that it was going to be a profitable endeavor.
Okay.
So anyway, Spawn number 10, who wrote that? Oh, this was Jeffrey Brown, I believe, wrote my first issue, looking forward to this one. John Wilson came back again, sending out a link for X Aspirations, which is a husband and wife podcast. The husband's a lifelong comics fan. He's trying to get his wife checking out X-Men comics, I think on an issue-by-issue basis. And sometimes they go off on tangents, and he really went off on a tangent on this one episode from, I think, earlier this year or last year. John Wilson notes, I'll be listening to your episode soon, but I wanted to recommend this podcast episode that, before diving into X-Men talk, has an extensive discussion of Dave Simmons' Cerebus, if you're interested. Seamus and Candace are good podcast. I listened to it. They did like an hour, like at least 53 minutes, I think it was, on Cerebus and Dave Sim and the wackadoo stuff that he went through. And Wilson's coming at it from the perspective of somebody who actually was reading the comics as they were coming out. So it's definitely very interesting and much more of a deep dive than we're able to do in the context of our show. But back to Jeffrey Brown, writes, I have the Cerebus issue of Spawn, like two copies of it. I remember reading it in 08 when I was just beginning my own comic book making career. At the time, I was just learning about the history of Image Comics and creator rights, and this issue really engaged me on that level. I have never read Cerebus or Infinity. I did see Image house ads in the back of either Shadowhawk, but I never knew all of the other stuff you and Mr. Fixit talked about in this episode. I'm well aware of Dave Sim's storied history and MRA views, hence why I never read his comics. And as far as this new Spawn movie coming out, I am sitting waiting on to see the trailer, if the trailer will come out. I hope you and Fixit will get to Stormwatch, Gen 13, Tried by Larry Stroman, Supreme, Cyberforce, Deathmate crossover with 90s era Valiant, and the introduction of Gen 13. I feel like I have pretty much grown up with Image Comics, along with nearly everything else in the 90s. I have been doing a casual reread of the Wildstorm comics and a few Extreme titles while listening to your podcast.
Cool.
Not a lot of elaboration there.
Well, I mean, you know, I would like to read some of that other stuff. I'm interested in kind of reaching into the far corners of Image, like Stormwatch, because I haven't read any. I mean, like I told you, I've brought up several times, I want to read, like, Troll.
Like, right.
I can't remember if I ever read Troll. Jeez, I just saw, I was at Hasselhoff and they had like this huge, someone must have sold their collection of just old Image books. And I was trying to find like just some weird shit that we could do, but I couldn't find anything unusual. But there was some really cool shit in there that I hadn't seen. Like, you know, the first issue of Max and then one issue that a little bit of every book that was coming out. I can't remember, man. I'll have to pick it up next time.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to put together stuff as we go along and hopefully I can find some of this stuff. I was talking about the Evan Dorkin commission I've got going. He's filling in all these characters in the background, and he contacted me asking for some Tribe reference. And I was like, man, I don't have any Tribe comics. I think I read the first issue all those years ago, and I haven't read it since. And I didn't realize it, but in slowly accumulating stuff for this show, I've actually got most of the run of Tribe and didn't even realize that I had it. So it's going to be interesting because I'm going to throw you some definite curveballs in the future. So
okay, cool.
We'll see how it goes.
I don't think I ever read Tribe or
Shaft.
Was it Shaman's Tears?
Yeah, I definitely read Shaman's Tears. You know, it's a little ways out, but not super duper far out. We're catching up on some of the gaps we've had on producing Spawnometers. We're trying to get them out on a more rapid clip, so we might get there quicker than I'm thinking.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, I'm also picking up odd Image related action figures that appeal to me, which you can get pretty cheap. I remember there were the days when Spawn toys were very coveted, but now I'm having some good luck finding them for like $5-6 a piece. And I picked up some Wildcats figures, you know, just whatever ones appealed to me, whichever characters I kind of was into and never wanted to spend the money on before.
What are you like? Are you like placing them around the house or?
So far, yeah, I've kind of cracked them open and kind of put them off to places. I've got a Demonite on the shelf. I almost got a Troll, but I was trying to get it for under $5 and I wasn't quite there yet. I'm going to try to catch a sale at like Bedrock or something in the future.
Well, no, because I was going to say, when we went to that one convention in Dallas, I remember this guy had a box and he was selling them for $2 a pop. And I feel dumb that I didn't go ahead and pick up or at least go through the box. To see what he had in there. I remember he had a shitload of Spawn ones in there.
Yeah, $2 a pop, you could buy it just to put it in a recycling bin, you know, just for the environment.
I would have liked to pick up some of them really bizarre, like the dragon ones.
Yeah, I don't see really the dragon crazy ones, man. I definitely want to have a Savage Dragon figure, and I've not seen one, period. I've not seen any in the wild. Certainly nothing like deep discount. I think that they did some pricier stuff a few years back from like some little, you know, pocket collections. But I haven't seen any of those mass-produced ones from when the show was out on the cheap, so I haven't had that opportunity yet.
Well, because I've been hanging out with Flyhole, and we've been fine. Well, next time, dude, you and I need to go to Trader's Village, there's literally, I want to say, 15 to 16 toy, like, figures. They sell figures there, and every kind of toy, because he kind of got me hooked on the Hellboy figures.
Mm-hmm.
So I have Hellboy, and I have some of them, and, you know, the whole story behind that one is, you know, a container full of these toys fell over a ship, so that's why there's a limited run on them. But they had, like, Mr. Wing and Abe Sapien, like, these really cool figures. I don't know, they look, like, I was going to price them, but the guy was super busy, wouldn't give us time. It's just kind of cool to see all these little toy stores in there, and they had all these, like, just really old random stuff I hadn't seen in forever.
I've had an itch to try get over to Trader's Village because the only time I've been there was during their little bullshit comic convention, and I was so focused on trying to check out what comics they had that I didn't get to spend very much time in the actual shop. So yeah, that's something I can definitely see us doing in the future.
All right, you and me and Fryhawk can meet up and go to one. I'm telling you, like, we went there and I thought at best we'd run into two or three shops. I started counting once we were like at 9 or 10, and I think we stopped at 15. And they're a very sizes. There's some that are just, you know, big time toy stores, and it's just like collectors. You walk in there and they'll have a bin full of figures, and you just kind of have to start going through the bin to find stuff. And I was finding, like, this one guy I could have killed an hour there. He had I can't even the dimensions of it, but a box full of Muscle toys, a little Muscle.
I remember them. I had some when I was younger.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh my god, I would. And I'm like, how much? He's like, 25 cents a piece. He goes, but if you buy, you know, he's giving me, like, you know, if you buy 10, I'll give you this. And I'm just like, and I remember I was like, no, I'm gonna be here for like an hour. That little collector part of my brain is going to want me to go through each figure and
try to get one of each. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, no, it's not worth it. And then, you know, I remember this one guy had a box full of, like, remember them old soldier guts?
Oh, yeah, guts. Sure.
Yeah. He had a whole box. I mean, it was just kind of very nostalgic to go through all these, like, toy boxes of shit that now as an adult I can afford. But I remember as a kid, I couldn't, you know, get my hands on.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely get that urging. You know, that we're clearly in our middle age where we've got the disposable income where we can go, here's that thing that I wanted that I could not afford when I was a young person. I'm going to buy it now just because I can.
Yeah, I had that feeling when I was walking around there, and I was like, and I mean, they had some really cool stuff. I mean, some of those, you know, some of them, they have the retro stuff, but a lot of them had like just brand new shit that was just like, oh my God, I had never seen you. That's, you know, he kind of got me a little bit hooked on Marvel Legends. I've been picking up some of these loose figures here and there just because they look fantastic and they're dirt cheap. So, again, another tangent.
Yeah. One last thing, too. There's a little bit more news has trickled out on the Spawn movie. Any thoughts on any of that?
Who's playing Twitch?
Jeremy Renner.
Jeremy Renner. I'm still on the thing about it feels more like McFarlane's just trying to prove he can do it better than anybody else. And I think he's going to either overshoot it. Before, like I said, if it was a small horror film, I could have been behind it. But it sounds like he's trying to, he hasn't directed anything, man.
Well, my thing is, the original Spawn movie had Martin Sheen. So it's sort of like, wow, you got Martin Sheen. You got, I think, D.B. Sweeney. They had some people that people actually heard of. And
John Leguizamo.
Although I think I didn't really pay attention to him but until like the Spawn movie. That's when I actually started paying attention to that dude. But yeah, so it's like, just because you have the names doesn't mean you got anything you're going to do with them. I'm still kind of hung up on Michael Jeter not being Twitch, even though Michael Jeter's been dead for a long time now.
Yeah.
But I guess Renner could work. It's just that Renner's someone who, if you see him like grow out a mustache, I kind of picture Commissioner Gordon. And so it's like, I wish they'd gotten somebody a little bit more atypical in terms of an action type character. I think that Twitch is somebody you hire like a comic actor or like somebody who wouldn't picture in an action role, and then you put him in the action role. And that's kind of the appeal of that character, is he doesn't look like he's a man of action and he surprises you. He's kind of like that whole Phil Coulson quality. And instead of getting a Clark Gregg, they got a Jeremy Renner. It's like, what?
Yeah, I get that.
Plus, why aren't they doing anything with Sam, too? They keep acting like this guy isn't around. It's like, why aren't you doing anything with Sam? It's Sam and Twitch. He's even top billed.
I don't know, man. I'm not putting too much into them. Like, there's a lot of movies coming out. I'm not going to put too much faith in them. I'm just going to say, I don't know how to say it. Like, it would be nice if it was a happy surprise that it came out really well. I just don't have a lot of faith in it.
Yeah. But I do really appreciate that they've been reporting that Fox actively pursued the role of Spawn for like 6 years. He's a comic fan. He's read these comics. He feels like if another actor tried to play this role, he would step up to any actor that showed up trying to be Spawn, because he feels like he has a better understanding of that character and a greater knowledge of that character than any other actor that would have potentially gone up for that role. So I just really appreciate Fox's commitment, his passion for it. And what it makes me think of too is you look at somebody like Michael Keaton, who was Batman. So he gets to, dine on being Batman for the rest of his career. So even though he's an older guy now, he's old enough to where he's not going to get cast as a superhero anymore outside of a Birdman. Yeah. So when you come at him and you say, well, you want to do the Vulture now? And he's like, yeah, sure. That'll be fun. That'll be awesome. I'll do that. And then you look at Jamie Foxx and he's still in great shape. He's got superhero physique, and they come to him and they offer him fucked up bullshit Electro. And it's just like, this is a guy who wants to be Batman at some point in his career, and they're giving him Electro, and he's getting the parts that a guy like Michael Keaton doesn't have to worry about being offered to him until he's, in his 60s. I'm happy that Fox is getting to do his superhero movie. So I'm happy for him, and I'm loving that he's passionate about it. It doesn't mean it's going to translate to shit, but
I was going to say, you can have all the good intentions you want. It doesn't mean it's going to translate very well.
Right. But I'm just happy for him to have that. Even if the movie sucks, he'll get to he was Spawn. He got to do a superhero movie. So, but I hope enough. I hope it gets a sequel, and I hope he gets to really fully invest in this role. And I love that you've got an actor who's actually excited to play a comic book superhero. I'm so tired of these guys who seem like they're kind of over it, or they're like, I don't know if I really want to get involved with this shit. And I just love that he's like, no, I want this. I'm actively pursuing this. I'm willing to fight for this. This is my thing. So I appreciate that at least.
Well, no, I mean, it would be great if it was good. If they had put, if you had told me David Finch is going to do Spawn movie, I've been like, holy shit. But you have good actors, and then Todd McFarlane's like, well, I'm going to direct it. I'm just like, what have you?
It would be nice if you had a director.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, if you had
and a screenwriter.
Spawn would have been amazing, dude.
Which one?
It would be so Cronenberg.
Oh, Cronenberg. Oh, yeah. I think that might be Spawn. Too intense, though.
I think that would be, but that's that small, really dark, fucked up film that right now the crowds are wanting. They want that little movie that sneaks out of somewhere. This movie that we're not expecting to hit, I think he would do something like that. It would just be, holy shit.
They want a Deadpool, but they don't want Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that. I absolutely see that. So I'm hopeful. the odds are not in favor of, you know, get an actual, you know, do the story and then have a screenwriter go over it, you know, something.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we're definitely going to do a podcast. I say we do a podcast walking into the theater and then literally immediately after we walked out.
Before we get to Superman 2, I have a few ideas for some special episodes we could do.
Lay them on me.
How about we take a look at some of the other films the cast and crew of Superman made after their 1978 triumph?
Great idea. You know what we should start with? Inside Moves, the terrific comedy drama Richard Donner directed in 1980.
Sounds cool. Do you think we should bring a guest on to talk about it?
Absolutely. And there's only one person we should get.
Hey, hi out there. I am Richard Donner, but you can call me Dick. And you're listening to Superman Movie Minute? Is that right? Did I do it right?
That's right. On Monday, May 28th, Superman Movie Minute returns with a special episode taking a look at the underseen Richard Donner movie Inside Moves. And our special guest will be Richard Donner.
We can't believe it either.
Check out Superman Movie Minute, May 28th, 2018.
Only on fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Hi, everybody. John Suntress here from the Word Balloon Podcast and the Word Balloon Network. First, I want to say thank you very much for the last 9 years of support, listening to the podcast, talking about it to your friends. If you're new to Word Balloon, it's a one-on-one interview show. It's an audio podcast, and it's my pleasure to talk to a lot of great creators of the geek culture.
Since I started Word Balloon in May of 2005, it's afforded me the opportunity to get to know a lot of interesting creative minds, what makes them tick, and of course learn about the projects that they're involved with. People like Brian Michael Bendis, the great Marvel creator and crime comic writer that has become a valuable ally, advocating me to the rest of the comic book world and really helping grow my audience through our one-on-one Bendis tapes conversations. There are other great creative thinkers I've gotten to know through long conversations and continued discussions. People like Jonathan Hickman, who has produced wonderful work for Marvel, The Avengers, S.H.I.E.L.D., and The Fantastic Four, along with his original ideas, The Nightly News, Manhattan Projects, and more. Matt Fraction, who's done great work on Iron Fist, Iron Man, and Hawkeye for Marvel, in addition to books like Sex Criminals, Satellite Sam, and Five Fists of Science at Image. Mark Waid has been a wonderful ally. We've been able to talk about his entire career, starting with books like The Flash, Superman Birthright, Legion of Superheroes, to his creator-owned work for Boom Studios, and his current work at Marvel on things like Daredevil and The Hulk. But even in brief conversations with people like Grant Morrison, who talked to me during the Batman RIP run and All-Star Superman, or the brilliant Karen Berger, the former Vertigo editor-in-chief, I've been able to get insight into their creative process, the things that they like, and possible future directions for the comic book and geek market.
Thanks a lot for listening.
Steph.
What?
Have you ever read a Superman comic?
Not in the last few hours.
Oh, I was just checking, right? Just checking.
Hey, everyone. My name is Michael Bailey, and I have been a fan of Superman for as long as I can remember. In 1987, I started collecting the Superman comics as a going concern, which led me down a long and winding comic book-filled path to 2007, when I first started podcasting. Well, it's 2017, and because it's been 10 years since I started podcasting, and 30 years since I started reading Superman full-time, I thought it might be fun to start a new show called It All Comes Back to Superman. It All Comes Back to Superman will be my monthly reaffirmation of my Kryptonian faith where I will pick out something about the Man of Steel and discuss it. Sometimes I'll be alone. Sometimes I'll have a guest. No matter how many people get involved, Superman will be the focus. It all comes back to Superman as part of the Fortress of Baileytube Podcasting Network. New episodes will drop on the 28th of every month. This show and all of the other programs that are part of the Fortress of Baileytude Podcasting Network can be found at www.fortressofbaileytude.com.
This is a fan-produced, not-for-profit podcast. No copyright infringement is intended, and any use of copyrighted materials believed to be covered under fair use. If you don't agree, you can go straight to hell!